This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with the maestro Tim Muffett, starting his 16th season as the conductor for the Baton Rouge Symphony. A big new season is set to begin, and we'll talk with him about what's coming and about the importance of the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra in our community. Also, Dr. William Davis, a cardiologist who believes that health should be in the hands of the public. He advocates insightful and cutting-edge strategies to help individuals discover the health hidden within them. And his latest book is Wheat Belly, Total Health, the Ultimate Grain-Free Health and Weight Loss Life Plan from Dr. William Davis, number one New York Times bestseller. We shall return after this time out for the news on 89.3. WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing, and thanks to Robert Travis Scott and to Jim Nickel, who hosted the last few days and did fine work, and it's good to be back with you. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online, and you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show on the October 1, 2014 edition of this program. The 90th birthday, by the way, of James Earl Carter, the 39th President of the United States of America, born in Plains, Georgia, on this date in 1924. Tim Muffett is our guest, who's been with the Baton Rouge Symphony for 16 years, 12 years longer than Carter was president.
How about that?
You've had much more staying power than Jimmy Carter did as president. And 16 years, it's been a blur, hasn't it?
It's really flown by. And, you know, we had an event the other day, last night actually, and some of our musicians were playing, and I was just admiring their artistry. It was just two of them, right? So when we go out on stage, we go out there with 80. But here was an opportunity for me to hear two of our musicians playing a brief recital in a private home. And that explained to me everything about why this has been such a blur. We have extraordinary musicians in the Baton Rouge Symphony. We're so fortunate in this community to have a pool of talent like we have playing in that orchestra.
And you speak from experience. You've been all over the United States and have worked in other places and still do. And you know good musicians when you hear them.
Yes, and we have them here, Jim. Our whole community can be very proud of this group, the Baton Rouge Symphony.
And it seems like every year we talk about how nice the venue is and how the season is going to be spectacular, but you've once again attracted an array of performers that will be highlights throughout the year.
Well, we're very excited about our guest artists, and yeah, we do say it every year, Jim, because that's the plan. We try to plan an exciting season every year. That's better than the alternative, I think. We've got our first artist I'm very excited about. It's a young man from Belarus named Evgeny Kutik, and he has a remarkable story to tell that we'll get to when he gets here in a month or so, but he's an incredible rising young star. We have a great seasoned artist, Philippe Bianconi, coming a month later, and I bring up his name specifically because many of your listeners who have been with the symphony for a long time are know Philippe. He's had a long-standing relationship with the Baton Rouge Symphony, and he's going to play everybody's favorite piano concerto, the Rachmaninoff Third Concerto. We're excited to have the Baton Rouge Symphony Chorus, which is our volunteer choral organizations, but they sound great. In fact, anyone who, they're, I think, holding auditions soon, if any of your listeners would like to sing with them, they should come check that out. Symphony Chorus will join us for our holiday program, and then also for a great epic work, a film score, actually, by Prokofiev called Alexander Nevsky. We got the Beethoven Sixth Symphony, just a whole array of popular and wonderful classical music.
And some announcements that are still to come, right?
And some announcements still to come, yes. The Pennington Great Performers in Concert, which is everyone's waiting to hear what that's going to be. And that'll be a great announcement. We're looking forward to that.
I understand it's going to be a rather substantial one.
Yes.
Do we get initials?
No, I'm sworn to secrecy on that. That's part of the fun.
297-5633 is your number for Tim Muffett, who on his last appearance on this show, I think, was referred to as the George Clooney of Baton Rouge.
Well,
he got married, you got married.
Right. I saw there was a, I don't know if you saw this great headline, but, you know, he married a very well-known attorney, right, mm-hmm. of international repute. And so the headline was, world-famous attorney marries actor. I thought that kind of put things into perspective.
Well, he's done rather well. I was out in California a few days ago, and I noticed he was identified on one of the newscasts as 59-year-old George Clooney. He's only 53.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sure.
You know, he's getting somewhat litigious, too. He might sue over his age being announced improperly or incorrectly. But October 16th, the Thursdays at the Symphony are a tradition in this community. And come October 16th, you have one of the great violinists in the world.
This is Yevgeny Kutik. And I mentioned earlier, his family fled, literally, the Soviet Union when he was a young man and took up residence here. And we came out the better for it to have an artist of this caliber here. And he's a great person and a great fiddle player. And we're really excited to have him on board. That'll kick off our season in October, and then we kind of knock them down once a month. I also want to mention our chamber series, the Lamar Family Chamber Series, which, again, we're continuing with the Baroque Festival, which we've done for the last couple of seasons, and it's been very popular, where the whole series focuses on Baroque music, and audiences have really taken to that. So we're sticking with it for another year. We have our All-Star Pops series, which has a great Broadway program and the Holiday Pops in there. We have Dan Bornay on tap for the Holiday Pops again, voice of Tiger Stadium. We're excited about that. So just a long list of exciting programs starting this October.
Well, and it's nice that you have the voice from the valley, Dan.
Oh, I know. That was a lot of fun, and he's, you know, Dan is such a pro, and he narrates. We did this last season, and of course, it was a huge hit. The Night Before Christmas, mm-hmm. and he just does a great job with it. He's got a musical background himself, and so then you put him in the dramatic role. And it's a winning combination.
Also head of the Louisiana Chemical Association.
How about
so Dan
that?
Dan gets around.
Yes, he does.
But you've got quite a team. David Torns, the associate conductor, he's been around for a while, too.
Dave's been with us for quite a while. He heads up the Louisiana Youth Orchestra, which is a very important component of what we do on the education side, giving a lot of opportunities for literally hundreds of young area Baton Rouge music students to come and have a really intense and great experience. So Dave conducts the youth orchestras, and he's also our associate conductor. So he does our POPs programs. He does our Rural Life concert and some of our other outreach events. Does our Discovery Series, which is a during the day program where we bus kids in and do a program especially designed for school kids. So we're happy to have Dave on board. He does wonderful work for us.
And a new executive director as well.
Yes, this is probably the biggest news. We've hired just recently Carrie Bird, who's coming to us from Houston. However, he made his home here in Baton Rouge for many years and is a very fine fundraiser. He worked in development for a group called Da Camera, a professional chorus in the Houston area. He was also on the development team, headed up to development for the LSU School of Music before going over to Houston, and then now is back in the executive director seat. Kerry is a great guy. He's got a very good sense for business, and he's a musician himself, so it's a winning combination.
Well, you've got an exceptional team in 16 years. I would imagine some of the people, though, that perform with the symphony, they've been there much longer than you.
Well, yes. Some of them in the 40 years, yeah. I mean, but it's great. That's the heart and soul of the organization, mm-hmm. those people who have all that institutional mm-hmm. memory.
And you spend summers in New York.
Mm-hmm. I've been up there now for 18 years. We head up to the north and at the Chautauqua Institution in Chautauqua, New York, and I conduct an orchestra up there. And that's a great inspirational setup mm-hmm. over there.
New York is quite a place, and people of all kinds, and certainly some people who love the arts. And Rupert Murdoch actually has a newspaper there, the New York Post. I have a copy I got in California, of all places. It says, another liberal crybaby born for dim Clintons, and has Bill and Hillary and their granddaughter, I think, yeah, Charlotte. And below it, it says party pooper. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Unbiased journalism, fair and balanced from right. Rupert Murdoch, who also has the Wall Street Journal. So we have some media moguls in New York and in Baton Rouge. And do you think the symphony gets its fair shake, considering the staple that it is in the community? Is it somewhat underappreciated?
Well, you know, I feel that we do get strong community support here, and we have for a long time. This is, you know, we've been around 66 years. Of course, we're always looking to broaden that base, and grassroots support is really important. I feel like the more people that have a buy-in, then the stronger the impact we make on a community. We get strong community support, and we're always looking for more, Jim.
Well, you have it, and I think that the key is to get young people involved. And having gone to the symphony a few times, it's generally a graying crowd. How do we entice young people to become exposed to the great work that goes on with the Baton Rouge Symphony and other symphonies across the country?
Sure. Well, this is you touch on a subject that's a perennial topic for orchestras across the country, and some of it just simply has to do with the realities of the cycle of life. That by the time your hair starts to gray, maybe your kids are old enough that you can leave them at home alone and you can come out to hear the symphony. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that equation, it's a lot about the event. You know, no longer is it enough to just say, we're going to play a concert, everyone come in, sit down and play. We need to create a sense, and we work to create a sense of an event at the concert, and everything from when you walk in the front door. And I think in our own personal area of growth, that's where we can continue to grow and improve as an organization, is working around the entire event of the concert. We've got it pretty down when it comes to what happens on stage once the concert begins. And I think for the younger people, they want to feel a sense of an evening out that has a lot of components to it. And that's what we're trying to step up a little bit.
297-5633, a bit more time with Tim Muffett, 16 years now, conductor for the Baton Rouge Symphony. Question online saying, what does Timothy think the role the symphony could play in radio broadcasts for promoting classical music on local radio?
Well, it's that's a great question, and we miss our classical music. I'll be honest with you. We miss our classical music that used to be more prominent, and I understand why things are the way they are. And we would love to see as much classical music showing up on the airways as possible, so when people get into their car, they hear it. We're very thankful for the broadcasts that Constance Navratil hosts, both from the Baton Rouge Symphony broadcasts and the LSU School of Music broadcasts. And hopefully there'll be opportunities for more classical music in the near future.
Tim Muffett is the guy to make it happen, but radio is important when we're talking about sound, and there is no greater sound than the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra. And it's quite an appealing presentation that you have, starting with the wardrobe from Manuel Martinez. Mm-hmm. I'm looking. He sent an email here, and I think I misplaced it. Let me see if I can find it. He says something about tweed being in. You're not going to wear tweed on stage.
No, there'll be no tweed.
But the outfits that he produces are quite fitting.
Literally. Well, I'm very privileged to wear a set of tails that Manuel created, and they are truly a work of art. He's one of our real one of the jewels in our crown here.
He's an artist just as you are, and the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra is going to be in full bloom on the 16th, also November 20th and December 4th, and throughout the year. And we shall return for a bit more time with the maestro, Tim Muffett, after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF.
This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing. 297-5633. Hippolyte Landry, Dr. Landry calling. You're on the air with Maestro Tim Muffet. Good morning, Hippolyte.
Good morning to you, Jim, and Dr. Muffet, my two favorite personalities in Baton Rouge. Boy, is it good to hear you guys together up there today.
Nice to hear from you too, Hippolyte.
Yeah, Dr. Muffet, I'm so nice to hear. While I was waiting for you all to come on the line, I'm so much at error. My birthday party was a week ago. Jim was here, and I forgot to call you. And I thought you were out of town, I guess. Doggone it. We'll make it next year.
I'll catch the next one for sure, yes.
The next one.
Good morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
89 years old next time around for Hippolyte. So you're showing some staying power, Hippolyte.
I hope so. Well, Dr. Muffet, you're certainly doing a great job with this here in Baton Rouge. I've been following you closely, as you know, for your 15 years you've been here, and we hope that you're going to be another 15. You've done a remarkable job with the symphony, and we thank you very much for being a part of Baton Rouge.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you, Hippolyte. It's, as you know how much I love this city, and it's a pleasure. It's a great pleasure to be a part of it and working to bring great music to our community.
Thank you, Hippolyte. 297-5633. And for all of the 16 years that Tim Muffet has been on stage at the River Center down the street on Highland Road, there's been a place called Highland Coffees. And I go out of town for a few days, and I hear they're going to shut the place down.
Yes, this, you know, I know that many of our musicians congregate there, and that will be... that's going to be a change of pace and routine for many, many people.
Well, there is a story today that negotiations have resumed. So perhaps Clark Cadzo, who is slated at this time to be with us tomorrow, can weave his magic and keep his shop open on Chime Street. And that's an area that I'm quite familiar with, and there are very few businesses that do succeed long term. Mm-hmm. And he is one who has, and he has a venue that many people hold near and dear. I think over 5,000 people have signed an online petition, and there will be a rally at LSU tonight to save Highland Coffees.
Well, here's the thing that's so beautiful about that, Jim, and I don't pretend to know the story, or I'm not even taking sides on anything here, but the fact that our people here care so much about this local business that they're willing to step up to the plate and express their thoughts about it. You know, there are other places you can get a coffee, but it says a lot about Baton Rouge that here's our local business that they care so much about that they want to see it continue to succeed.
And I can tell you that that area, no matter what you put in there, is going to have challenges because of parking. And Clark Cadzo has been able to survive despite that, as Jimmy Weatherford has at Louie's. And Jimmy is moving primarily because he needs more parking. And if any business goes in there, they're going to have to contend with the fact that there are very few places to park. But Clark has managed to do it, and a lot of it involves foot traffic from people who are in the area, either as students, professors, or they live around the area, and he has done it with a great amount of class and style for 25 years. Stephen Hammond. Steve, good morning. You're on with Tim Muffet.
Hey, good morning. Thank you very much for letting me speak. I appreciate much of what the symphony has done, of course. As somebody who's involved in creative and performing arts, I realize the importance of educating our youth, and whether it be from kindergarten through 12 or through college age or younger. Of course, our audiences are getting older and older. I'd like for maybe Tim to review what the symphony does currently to help educate our populace about the creative and performing arts and the value of it, and also ask what he might need in the future for expanding that mission.
Well, thanks, Steve. That's a great question. We've had a long tradition of making the education of young audiences a priority, and not even treating them as young audiences, but treating them as individuals and developing the whole person. And the cornerstone of our educational thrust are our discovery concerts, where we literally play for thousands of Baton Rouge area kids every year. The general target is grades 4 through 7, in that series. We sometimes see slightly older and slightly younger kids come in, but we've been doing that almost as long as the organization's been around, and it's been a longstanding tradition and success. We also, as I mentioned earlier, our Louisiana Youth Orchestras program is a really a wonderful, engaging, hands-on experience where kids ranging from elementary school through high school come in. We have three different orchestras within the umbrella of the Louisiana Youth Orchestra program. And so these kids come in and have an opportunity for playing at a very high level and getting a very special training on their instruments, which hopefully they'll, even if they don't go on into professional, into careers in music, they're going to certainly take the discipline and the teamwork and the reaping rewards from efforts put in on their own. They're going to take all of those lessons off with them into their lives, as well as a wonderful appreciation of the arts. We've also had programs where we send small ensembles out into the schools to do specially crafted programs, our Symphony Street program. And it always, like anything else, it comes down to money, and all of these things cost money, and but we've made it a priority, and we plan on continuing to do so.
Paul Anopoulosis. Paul, you're on with Tim.
Thank you, Jim, and welcome back. Tim, just a question. Recently, I was hearing on NPR about the Atlanta Symphony. They're struggling financially, and I know some symphonies have really went on strike and tried to, you know, do negotiations with the cities they're hosting. How's the stability of the Baton Rouge Symphony, and we have one here in Lafayette? Do you see this being a trend with symphonies across the country just fighting to survive? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question, Paul. And it's these are difficult times for any nonprofit organization, and orchestras are swimming upstream in a lot of places. The Atlanta Symphony is a really unfortunate set of circumstances where we have, you know, one of the premier performing organizations of the South, in the South, and they are in a prosperous city, and even that organization is having some difficulty. I think that one of the wonderful things about South Louisiana is that these are communities both out there in Lafayette with your fabulous Acadiana Symphony, and here in Baton Rouge. Our communities value what these performing organizations bring, and they step up to the plate and help us financially. This is a difficult time, though. I won't lie to you. This, you know, we're counting paperclips, and we are an organization that is very responsible and highly efficient. Even in those situations, it's always a financial challenge for us.
Question as we round it out with Tim Muffet from Jason downtown. He says, has Tim ever met John Williams?
You know, I haven't met John Williams, but I would love to. I've done much of his music, and not just the great film music, but John Williams is also a composer of concert music, which sounds very, very differently than his movie music. I've not met him, but I would certainly appreciate the opportunity someday.
And I'm sure he would enjoy meeting you as well. That would be quite a conversation. Perhaps we could have it in studio.
Hey, let's do it. You set it up. I'll be here, Jim.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tim, and good luck. And we'll stay in touch as your season progresses.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. And we go from music for the soul to importance and health and how we live and what we put in our system. Our guest is Dr. William Davis, a noted cardiologist who's been on shows of this kind all over the country, as well as many national programs, both radio and television. And his latest work is the New York Times bestseller, Wheat Belly. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to hear your voice, Dr. Davis. Well, tell us about the dangers of wheat. Is wheat detrimental to our health?
Well, it's an odd irony, isn't it, that this food that has the halo, the blessing of just about every official agency that talks about health, is the worst thing you could possibly eat, responsible for a truly astounding list of health conditions, from depression to anxiety to paranoia to appetite. It's stimulation, pardon me, to autoimmune diseases like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, skin rashes. It's truly a long, long list numbering hundreds of diseases, largely due to the fiddlings of agribusiness. They changed wheat. Wheat was a problem for humans as long as we've consumed it, but they amplified, they increased the problems associated with wheat when they changed the plant and did so rather dramatically using some bizarre techniques.
Well, isn't wheat in moderation, like many things, something that could be beneficial, or are you saying stay away from it altogether?
If your goal is to be healthy, I would have none of it. So several things to know. There's a protein in wheat called gliadin. People talk about gluten, but if you talk about gluten, you don't know what you're talking about. Gliadin is the protein. Gliadin is a protein that is very poorly digested. It's important for your listeners to understand that wheat is the seed of a grass. That's what grains are. They're seeds of grasses. So this is true of corn, it's true for rice, it's true for rye and barley. They're all seeds of grasses. Now, when you cut your lawn this summertime, I take it you don't save the clippings to put on top of your salad for dinner, right? And that's because humans are physiologically incapable of consuming grasses. We can't consume the blades, the leaves, the stalk, the roots. We cannot consume the grasses. If you did consume the grass clippings from your lawn, you'd pass them out whole after some distress and diarrhea and bloating, etc. You cannot digest grasses. This remains true for the seeds of grasses. That's what grains are. So you cannot digest most of the components in the seeds of grasses, and that remains true, for instance, for this gliadin protein. And this gliadin protein can remain intact, and that's the step that leads to all the 200 diseases of autoimmunity. If you digest it partially, totally like other proteins, like an egg, you break down the amino acids. But the gliadin protein you break down to pieces or peptides, and those are the peptides that act as opiates on the human brain. It binds to the opiate receptors of the human brain, and it stimulates appetite, an appetite stimulant. And so people who consume wheat are prompted to consume this modern form of wheat, are prompted to consume 400 to 800 calories more per day every day.
All right. Well,
and all we need to do is look around us, see the effect, right?
Well, how do we eliminate wheat from our diet altogether? If you're saying this is the way to do it, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. There are all kinds of things that that involve wheat products.
Well, that's exactly right. And I suspect it's not an accident that virtually every processed food has wheat in it. So licorice has wheat in it, taco seasoning, salad dressings, canned soups, instant soup mixes, frozen dinners, breakfast cereals. Almost every processed food has wheat in it. And I believe it's there because smart food scientists probably figured this out in the mid-1980s when they observed the huge increase in appetite when the products of high-yield semi-dwarf wheat, that's what modern wheat is now, it's an 18-inch tall plant, when these products hit the store shelves and they watch people's appetites escalate dramatically. So that's why I believe we have wheat in virtually every processed food. So it means a rejection of processed food because you can't otherwise avoid the products of the seeds of grass unless you do so. So it's avoiding the obvious sources like breads and pasta, as well as the hidden sources, all those processed foods. So it returns to real single ingredient foods. Now your listeners have to know, when you do this, you go through a very unpleasant opiate withdrawal. It's about 5-6 days or so of nausea, headache, depression, and cravings. So it's not pleasant. It can be very unpleasant. But this is the process that people have to go through in order to undo all the deleterious effects of consuming this modern thing created in a genetics laboratory.
All right. You're telling me I can't go to an Italian restaurant anymore if I want to stay healthy?
You can go. I go to Italian restaurants all the time, but you have to be very, very careful about what you choose there, because here's another phenomenon your listeners should know about. If you've been wheat-free for any length of time, say a month, 3 months, 6 months, and you have a re-exposure, whether it's on purpose, maybe a couple of bites of your son's birthday cake, or inadvertent, maybe some flour in the roux on the meat you had at a restaurant, you will get sick. You're going to have diarrhea, other forms of gastrointestinal distress. If you had joint pain before, it comes back. If you had a neurological problem, like incoordination or wetting your pants or seizures, they come back. So, and these processes can be reactivated for days, even months. So it's not a benign thing, but it's a great reminder. It's a great reminder how poisonous modern wheat and associated related seeds of grasses are. They are really, really bad.
297-5633 for Dr. William Davis. His book is Wheat Belly, Total Health. Dan downtown. Good morning, Dan. You're on the air.
Yes, I take it I should forsake my favorite breakfast of Wheaties, the breakfast of champions.
No more Wheaties?
This message is having an impact. Breakfast cereal sales are plummeting. Bread sales are plummeting. And you know what? It's not me. It's not my incredible charm and personality driving this message. It's the power of what people are experiencing. So if Dan, for instance, stops eating his Wheaties, eliminates all seeds of grasses from his life, and by the way, doesn't worry about fat, eat the yolks and eggs, buy fatty cuts of meat, don't trim the fat off your meat, eat it. Eat vegetables, of course, nuts, seeds, real foods. And you know what? Breakfast of champions? No, absolutely not. And you know what? The athletes are catching on. You saw LeBron James's story, right? Losing all this weight, looking terrific. He did that by eliminating, he said carbohydrates, but what he really means is grain. The key here is grain. And then secondarily, sugar. Sugars are a problem for many people, too.
So what foods generally have the most wheat products in them?
So breads, pasta, cookies, cakes, pretzels, crackers, just about anything that's processed. But there's also so many hidden sources, and so that's why it's really a chore to first identify all the foods with wheat in them. But that's why I say turn to real single-ingredient foods that you can be confident are safe. You know, an avocado is safe, of course, right? Or pork chops are safe. Or coconut milk is safe. Mm-hmm. Eggs are safe. So go back to real food and don't sweat the fat. There is nothing wrong with fat. You know, I'm surprised that many dietitians and many nutritional conversations are still focusing on fat and saturated fat when the data are very clear. Total fat and saturated fat have nothing to do with cardiovascular disease. I'm a cardiologist. I tell my patients, eat the fat. Eat the saturated fat. It's good for you.
Well, you know, you're going against the grain, literally.
Well, I'm bolstered by the science. The science is clear. You know, the whole cut your fat, cut your saturated fat message was a political message. It was never a scientific message. So if we ask the people who do the science, you will see that this was never based on real science. But it proved to be profitable. That's what that's keeping this campaign of misinformation alive. I don't envy the American Heart Association and other agencies who goofed by giving people advice that's very destructive because they don't want to admit culpability here. They don't want to take blame for having propagated a very, very destructive message for many years.
297-5633 is your number. We'll spend some more time with Dr. William Davis. His best-selling book is Wheat Belly, Total Health. He's a cardiologist who says that wheat, grains, stuff that we were told was good for us, maybe killing us. We'll be back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Dr. William Davis is with us, author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Wheat Belly. And he is back with Wheat Belly Total Health, the ultimate grain-free health and weight loss life plan. And we've got some folks waiting to talk with Dr. Davis. Leslie downtown. Leslie, you're on the air with Dr. William Davis.
Thank you, Jim. Dr. Davis, I was wondering if you see the same effects on health with heirloom grains as you do with modern grain.
Great question. So if we go back in time to traditional wheat, say the 19th century, it's less harmful. If we go back to the wheat of the Middle Ages, say, like Kamut or Spelt, it's even less harmful. If we go back to the wheat of the Bible, that's emmer wheat, it's even less harmful. We go back to the wheat that predates even biblical times, the very first strain of wheat harvested by humans who were desperate and hungry, that's einkorn wheat. Every step back, through these heirloom or traditional strains of wheat, it becomes less and less harmful. But does it ever become harmless? See, we have to be very careful in our how we use logic here, because we don't want to use the false logic used by nutritionists and dietitians. That is, if something is less bad, it must therefore be good. And you'll see that, by the way, practiced and followed by many, many dietitians and nutritional thinking. So let's ask, when does it become harmless? It never becomes harmless. So we've known this for many years, that even when primitive humans turned to the seeds of grasses, and by the way, think of that. Why did humans turn to the seeds of grasses? If you saw grass and saw its seeds, you probably wouldn't think to eat it. So humans consume the seeds of grasses like wheat and corn and rice for less than one-half of 1% of our time on Earth. Less than one-half of 1% of our time on Earth. So what we did, we had explosive problems in health. Tooth decay exploded. Iron deficiency appeared. You know, if you consume two slices of whole wheat bread, that reduces your iron absorption by 90%. That's because of the phytates in grains. It's another indigestible component. 2 billion people on this planet have iron deficiency anemia, most of them from consuming grains. So I would argue that no seed of grass is appropriate for human consumption. There are forms that are less harmful, but there are none that are harmless.
Charlotte in New Iberia. Charlotte, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. William Davis.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Davis, I just heard that last statement, but I still want to ask, where does oatmeal fit in your suggestion that a person eat or don't eat these products? And I'm going to hang up. Thank you.
Sure. So in this new book, The Wheat Belly Total Health, I extend the conversation. You know, the first book, Wheat Belly, 3 years back, I took on the king, the worst of all modern wheat, the thing that enjoys the blessings of all official agencies. I thought that was enough of a job to tackle with one book. I now extend it to say, you know what? Grasses are promiscuous. They mate with each other quite readily, and that's how grasses are, and they thereby share genetics. So rye, for instance, is a weed that occurs in wheat fields. It's been that way for thousands of years. So wheat and rye, for instance, share genetics. This is true of all grasses. They share a lot of genetics. So oats with rice and millet are at the more benign end of the spectrum. At the worst end is wheat, rye, barley, and corn, by the way. At the more benign end is oats and rice and millet, but not harmless. So if you check the blood sugar, for instance, after a bowl of organic oatmeal, no added sugar, you'll see that non-diabetic people have diabetic sugars after consuming oatmeal. And that's because another aspect of grains we haven't talked about is they all have a form of carbohydrate called amylopectin A that's responsible for higher blood sugars than even, ounce for ounce, than even table sugar. So if you follow a diet rich in healthy whole grains, you're going to have blood sugar problems and all the consequences of high blood sugars, including diabetes, but there's lots beyond diabetes. So oats raise blood sugar sky high, envision some other issues.
Well, you go so far as to say that many autoimmune diseases are related to wheat consumption. Can that be true?
Absolutely. In fact, this is not my speculation, Jim. This is work, for instance, from Dr. Alessio Fasano at University of Maryland, now at Harvard. He has published extensively on how the gliadin protein of wheat, when undigested, activates a pathway in the intestinal tract that initiates autoimmunity, that is, the body attacking its own organs. It could be thyroid and cause Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It could be the brain, and that can cause cerebellar ataxia, dementia. It can attack the nervous system, cause peripheral neuropathy. It can attack the pancreas and cause type 1 diabetes in children or pancreatitis in adults. In fact, liver, autoimmune hepatitis. So all these processes are initiated by the gliadin protein of wheat. Not to say every autoimmune disease is caused by wheat and related grains, but a lot of them are. And you know what? It's a thing that's so easy to remedy. And because people say, I feel fine, though. I don't know why I have to stop wheat. But you might not know that until maybe you're age 52 and you start to stumble and wet your pants because you have cerebellar ataxia and didn't know that the gliadin protein of wheat had initiated autoimmune destruction of your brain, in this case of your cerebellum.
You say it also, among many other evils of wheat, diminishes your sex drive.
That's right. So
my goodness.
Wheat and related seeds of grasses are endocrine disruptors. They change your hormones. You can see it in guys. So guys who have what I call a wheat belly, that is a large collection of visceral fat, inflammatory fat in their tummies, also have breasts, man breasts. Very embarrassing for guys, right? They go have surgery, they wear tight-fitting shirts that kind of compress the breasts, they go through all sorts of contortions to conceal them. This is from overexpression of the aromatase enzyme in that visceral fat that got its start with wheat consumption of grains. So this aromatase enzyme in guys converts testosterone to estrogen. So these guys with man breasts have high levels of estrogen, low levels of testosterone. Also, that gliadin protein I told you about, one of its byproducts activates prolactin, prolactin hormone from the pituitary, prolactation, prolactin, and that also causes man breasts to grow. So that's one example of how grains can mess up your hormones. This is also true in females. So one of the things ladies don't like to hear is breast size is reduced when you go wheat or grain-free. They actually have a drop in cup size of a size or two, but that's good because it's excessive estrogen that leads to breast cancer also.
So you're saying women have their breasts decrease and men have their breasts increase by consuming wheat? Is that what happens? Kind of like steroid use?
Both men and women experience an increase in breast size with wheat and grain consumption.
All right.
And then experience a reduction in breast size with wheat and grain elimination. And that's just one example. So you know, how many women have now told me they're fertile after years or decades of being infertile from consuming grains? You eliminate grains and they have children. It's an astounding effect.
297-5633, we're wrapping it up with Dr. William Davis. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning. You're on with Dr. Davis.
Hey, doctor. I just have a question about quinoa. I love rice so much, and I've gotten rid of it, and I switched to quinoa. I was just wondering how you felt about that.
A very frequent question, by the way. So quinoa is not a seed of the grass. It's a seed of a different sort, unrelated to grains. So we've got to be very careful in our logic here, because we don't want to replace a problem, wheat and grains, with another problem. So, you know, I tell people, for instance, jelly beans are not grains or wheat. Doesn't mean they're healthy. So just because it's not a grain doesn't mean it must therefore be healthy. So quinoa is a seed, and people say it's high protein, which it's not, by the way. It's very high carbohydrate. So it shares that aspect, that problem with grains. It's very high in carbohydrate, and if you eat a cup of, say, cooked quinoa, you're going to have a blood sugar problem, high blood sugars. So quinoa is okay in the smallest of quantities. If you want to have rice-like food, the best thing to do is to steam your cauliflower and then put it in your food chopper or food processor, and you just pulse it a few times. You get a beautiful rice-like product with none of the problems, no blood sugar issues, none of that stuff, and it's delicious. You can make fried rice from your cauliflower. You can make sushi even, if you do such things. You can do everything just about with cauliflower that you would have previously done with rice.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, Dr. William Davis. You have certainly generated much discussion about living wheat-free, and the way you make it sound, this is even worse than using tobacco products.
Just doing my job, Jim.
What? Well, let's talk again soon.
And, all right, thank you.
And I appreciate your input. Take care.
Sure thing.
And we're joined now by a young man, Tim Moriarty, who's a fine young actor who came this way from Seattle and is studying at Louisiana State University. And he is on stage in a major production. And good morning to you, Tim.
Good morning, Jim. It's good
to be here. What made you choose Louisiana State University?
Well, I was looking at different acting programs and went to a regional audition in Chicago and met some of the faculty members at LSU and was really taken by their vision, by their energy. I had never lived in the South and thought it would be a good experience to experience this culture, and I haven't regretted it at all since being here. So,
and tonight you'll be on stage.
Yes, we're at Swine Palace, very excited to produce a version of Frankenstein. We start tonight with a Pay What You Can. Tomorrow we have a sneak preview at a discounted price, and then our official opening is on October 3rd on Friday, and we will run until the 12th.
October 3rd through the 12th, the official opening, but you've been in production for some time.
We've been rehearsing for a number of weeks now, and it has been it's been a great process. We started with a real thorough examination of the novel and made all sorts of discoveries about who these characters are, why this story continues to captivate the imagination of people. And the script we're using is from Victor Gianella. This version had been done on Broadway on 1981. So it's been a very exciting process, exciting rehearsal process. We're joined by a guest equity artist from New York who's playing the creature, Brendan Everett, who's done just a marvelous job. He's 6'7" and has this tremendous physique, but also brings a real humanity to that role, which is wonderful. Also, the tech elements of the show are quite extraordinary. Steve Beck is the head of the music department at LSU, has created an original score. So a lot of the scenes where the creature is coming to life, there's this electronic music in the background, which is wonderful. And the lighting and the costumes, everything is really first rate. So it's quite an exciting production for us.
And you will be Victor?
I'm playing Victor. Yeah, I'm playing the obsessed, narcissistic, crazed scientist.
So it sounds like you're really into it.
Yeah, you know, it's a very fun, interesting role. Victor is an interesting character in that he's, you know, these characters, Victor and the creature, have become iconic. But what I find very exciting about our production is there's the idea of Frankenstein in the popular imagination of the movies from the 30s with Boris Karloff, but I think in our version the relationship between Victor and the creature is more balanced, and the creature really has a voice, Victor has a voice, and you see this struggle between these two points of view, which is compelling.
When you're in character like this, is it hard to turn it on and off? Like, are you Victor? Is Victor in the studio right now?
Well, it's interesting because I when you're playing a role, at least for me, There's the part where you first try to understand who this person is, and that becomes an intellectual exercise, and then you try to figure out what in your humanity can you bring to the role. So who is my Victor Frankenstein? For Brendan, what is his who is his creature, and for all the characters. So I feel like it's a process of trying to figure out what is it in me that corresponds to this role. But I haven't found I don't have the issue of you know, you hear some of the method actors who, like Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, running around in the forest preparing for The Last of the Mohicans. I'm not doing that.
You've got a few years, though.
Yeah.
It may take a life of its own, these roles you play.
That's true.
But this one has to be one that is somewhat challenging.
It is challenging, yeah, but it's also, it's exciting, I think, because this novel is not only a thriller, not only does it have suspense. Not only is it a great story, but it embodies a lot of important ideas that I think still resonate with our time today. So this obsession with progress, this obsession with control, coming face to face with limitations, what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to have responsibility? And so I think for me personally, playing with this role, it's kind of coming to grips with where am I trying to control reality? Where am I trying to force things? Where have I failed to take responsibility? So it's an interesting process. But also wanted to mention, just for those listeners, that our theme this whole season at Swine Palace is celebrating great literature. So our other productions will be All My Sons in February, and the book club play in April. And on Sunday, October 5th, we're starting a book club. The first book we're going to be reading is Frankenstein. So October 5th at 2 p.m. at La Madeleine's. And you can find more information on our Facebook page. So if you just go to the Swine Palace Facebook page, you can find more information about that.
Well, the official opening of the production of Frankenstein is this Friday from Swine Palace at the Shaver Theater.
The Shaver Theater, yeah.
Which is a spectacular place. And Tim Moriarty will be on stage, the man from Seattle who came to Louisiana State University as Victor Frankenstein. And for those who would like more information, 7:30 is the start, by the way. What's the best way to do it?
best way to do it is either to go to our website, swinepalace.org, or to call 225-578-3527.
Mm-hmm. This sounds like a George Judy production.
It is. George Judy is director, and I think he's done a wonderful job with it.
Yeah, he's a versatile guy, and this is the kind of topic I'm sure he he relishes.
Oh, yeah, he's really helped us dive deep into kind of the core issues here.
How large is the cast?
It's 12. Yeah,
okay, good sized cast.
It is.
Victor Frankenstein, Tim Moriarty in the role, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Good to be here.
And glad you've come to Louisiana State University. And Tim and others will be on stage this week, and it's through the
October 12th.
October 12th, starting Friday at the Shaver Theater in Frankenstein. Until tomorrow, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.